everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Fundamentally Sound Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Reeks from Barstool Sports. Got a pretty good episode today. We are joined later in the show by current Chicago Bull and former Villanova guard Ryan Archidiacono, who was able to take some time from his busy schedule. He's one of those two-way players, splitting time between the Windy City Bulls and the Chicago Bulls, to talk about life as a two-way player, life in the NBA, shares a DeMarcus Cousins story, and then his time at Villanova. Obviously, we get into the title game and being coached by Jay Wright and just kind of the program there at Nova, along with playing with guys like Jalen Brunson and Mikal Bridges, and if you saw the jump that we're seeing this year from the two of them. So that comes up later. But wanted to take a couple minutes here to talk about two of the big stories that broke. I'm recording this here at like 7:40 on a Thursday night. First was Michael Porter Jr. being cleared for basketball activities. And it's kind of been coming from what everyone knows and what's been out there. I don't think anyone's surprised by this. I will be surprised if he plays, simply because of a couple of reasons. One, there's just not a whole lot of time left in the season. There's about 2 weeks left of the regular season, and then SEC tournament, and then NCAA tournament. I don't know if he's going to be able to get back into basketball shape. I mean, remember, you're dealing with a back injury that's obviously a little different than some other things, and really give him full minutes. And then comes the question of whether he wants to be, I don't know if selfish is the right word or not, but he's a top six pick right now no matter what, unless the NBA doctors find something crazy going on health-wise that we don't know about. He's in that group. Whether he plays or not, there's enough tape on him from high school and the EYBL circuit and everything like that. Scouts have been around him enough. So if he plays, I mean, let's face it, he's going to be rusty. When you don't play for a year, that's just what happens. That's just common thing. I mean, he's a phenomenal talent. I mean, the dude's unreal. If he was healthy, he'd be in conversation for a number one pick, and even missing this year, he's in conversation as a top five pick. It shows how good he is. I mean, he's 6'10", 6'11", can really spread the floor, create his own shot, smooth stroke. It's kind of the skill set that you want in this modern-day NBA and even modern-day college basketball, because he can stretch, he's a decent rebounder. So, you know, he has the skill set. But again, if he comes out and just looks terrible, maybe a team takes Mo Bamba over him instead of vice versa. Or maybe a team takes Jaren Jackson over him instead of one that had Porter on the board higher than him before he played. Again, you're talking minuscule things here, but it does end up costing some money when you look at where they're drafted and the money slotted to them and everything like that. Ultimately, though, it still comes down to that second contract, and that's what Porter's got to be really playing for. I mean, I would love to see him play. It'd be good for college basketball. It'd be good for Missouri. It'd be a great story, him coming back from injury, playing with his brother, playing for his dad, who's an assistant coach on Missouri. His brother, Jonte, reclassified, jumped up to Missouri this year, so he could play with his brother before this injury occurred. So I hope he comes back and plays. I just don't know if that's going to happen. But he's cleared for return for basketball activities. That's the story. That's huge. I mean, again, I don't think a lot of people expected this when the news first broke early in the season that he had this back injury, for this to even be a possibility. And here we are on February 22nd, and it's a complete possibility. So, you know, I'm really hoping for that. Again, I think that'd be awesome. And, of course, conspiracy theory, if he does play, look to see who Missouri's matched up against, whether they play perhaps Washington, a school that he was originally committed to. If Washington gets in the tournament, maybe another top recruit or top prospect, if they're playing maybe Texas or Duke or someone like that. And then the second story that broke today is Arizona's Alonzo Trier being declared ineligible by the NCAA. Man, this is all sorts of crazy. Like, he was obviously missed half of last year when he tested positive for what was a PED, a banned substance. He tested positive in September of 2016. He filed his appeal. He won his appeal, but the NCAA said he couldn't play until it was completely out of his system. That happened in January of 2017. Here we are 13 months later, and there's still remnants, and it's really just a minuscule amount, and it's, to me, it's pretty dumb by the NCAA. He should win his appeal, honestly, based on everything I've heard and everything I've read. I mean, one thing to remember here is it can get, you know, it can get stored in fat cells, and the body metabolizes. It can reappear, and there's a lot of things like that that can happen. And it's just, man, it's just NCAA, and I'm not saying everyone should be out there on PEDs, but when the amount is a minuscule amount and it's something like this without, you know, if there's research to be done. Now, if it's something that's completely drastic, sure, don't be a moron. But, you know, I don't think it's that. Again, from what I've read and what I've heard, that's not the case. If he's suspended, you can just throw Arizona's national championship hopes out the door. Like, they're going to end up being okay, because DeAndre Ayton's a freak and he's one of the three best players in college basketball right now. But Trier is averaging 19 a game. He's shooting 43% from the three-point line. He lets him attack from the wing. I know people kind of freak out on him for what happened last year, where he kind of forced some shots and kind of took away from Lauri Markkanen. But Trier is good this year. Like, Trier is a borderline All-American. You can make a case for him as a third team All-American. He's second in the conference in scoring behind only DeAndre Ayton. He lets them attack from the wing. That's something that they'll be missing and something that they need. Teams can really double down on DeAndre Ayton. So I don't know what to expect here. I don't know how long the appeals process takes. Arizona's playing tonight when we're recording. They tip off in about an hour and a half. After that, there's two games left, and then it's the Pac-12 tournament, and then it's the NCAA tournament. I don't know if the appeals process, it's the NCAA. I don't want to guess how long the appeals process even takes. So those are the two big things that kind of happened today. Crazy, crazy stories. Just another random college basketball night on a Thursday where the slate kind of sucks, but news breaks, and I'm sure there'll be upsets today and everything like that. So, you know, I'm expecting to end up having to write something about 11:30 when something happens here on the West Coast or more news breaks. So outside of that, let's get into it here with my guy Ryan Archidiacono, currently Chicago Bulls / Windy City Bulls guard, and the former guard from Villanova who made the memorable pass to Chris Jenkins to beat North Carolina for the NCAA championship a couple years ago. As always, though, I have to ask, please rate, review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, whatever it takes. The more things like that happens, the better it helps me on the back end. Get guys like Archidiacono, gets guys like Vermont head coach Sean Becker to come on here, talk some hoops, helps with, you know, metrics and getting hopefully better equipment here soon, because I do this all on my own. For those that don't know, I do have help with CLNS Media, but this is a home product and everything like that. So please rate, review, subscribe, and leave a review. And we'll get into it here with Ryan Archidiacono. And now I welcome on current Chicago Bull and former Villanova guard Ryan Archidiacono. Ryan, what's going on, my man?
Not much. Watching the game here, and glad to have me on. So yeah, appreciate definitely. It very much. Yeah,
thanks for coming on. I know it's been a somewhat of a hectic time because you know, you have All-Star break, and but for you, it's a little different being a one of the, I believe it's like 45 two-way players this year in the NBA. And what's that like, man? Is it as hectic as it kind of seems in terms of going up and down? Or what's life like, I guess, as a two-way player for the first time that it's actually designated that way?
Yeah, no, I think it's actually really good for players like me who are kind of on the bubble of trying to make the NBA. So it gets them NBA experience. You're with the NBA team throughout training camp, and you get to work on your game with them, with the NBA coaches. And then after training camp, most of the time they'll go down with the D League. So you get to play a ton in the D League. And like myself a couple weeks ago, because Chris Dunn got hurt, I was up for 3 weeks with the big team, got my first NBA minutes. It's pretty unique. You kind of have to know both systems. I mean, luckily for me, Fred Hoiberg and our head coach of the D-League team run the same offense. We kind of run what the big team runs, so it's been an easy transition, but it's definitely different, and there's times where you have to fly from all over the place just to meet up with the team. Like last week we played, or a couple weeks ago we played at Portland, and then they had me fly to Dallas to play their D-League team on Friday night, and then I flew out Saturday morning, and then we played the Clippers at noon. So I had to fly the same day and then play the Clippers, and I played 10 minutes. So it's pretty grueling, but you just got to be ready to go because you know you don't know how many more opportunities you're going to get at the big level.
Is it tough at all or weird in a way to kind of go from locker room to locker room, or is it weird? Like, I guess trying to, like you said, it's obviously the same system helps, but getting used to playing with the guys that you're playing with, whether it's the Windy City Bulls or the Chicago Bulls, is there a transition period at all, or is it just kind of, you know, step on the court and things just feel natural, especially as a guard?
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of feels natural, but I think that the Chicago Bulls have a great young kind of nucleus and players who kind of respect you and know the situation that you're in, and I think the coaches understand that too. So like I said before, being in training camp with the big guys and getting to know like Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday and kind of the older vets on the team, you kind of earn their respect by going through training camp there all summer. And it's kind of an easier transition than you would think, kind of going back and forth, because they embrace you so well because they know the situation that you're in and how difficult it is. Now, when you go to the Windy City team, the guys have the same respect for you there. I think you have to earn each other's respect because it's a D League is, or the G League is a year by year thing, and rosters flip over like in the matter of a day or two, because guys are going in and out, whether it's to the NBA or they're going overseas. But it's been an easy transition because I think the Chicago Bulls guys have been great. They've really helped me transition when I'm up there, and the Windy City guys have been all a great bunch of guys too. And we're trying to win some games, but I think they're just a bunch of good dudes who've been coached well in the past.
Has there been anything that's really like surprised you about playing in the NBA?
No, for me, I mean, mine's really just been like spot minutes and just try to create some havoc on the defensive end and get us into it on the offensive end. But nothing's really surprised me, except for watching a couple superstars and their tendencies and what they've done. And I would say the biggest thing that surprised me was that like how we were playing the Clippers was how much DeAndre Jordan was communicating with his teammates on the defensive end, and he knew our plays. As soon as we called him out, he was calling out exactly what we were about to run. I'm sitting on the bench being like, man, this dude is the reason why he's been a 10-year pro and however many all-star games, and we know he's a high-flying dunker, but on the defensive end, he was a monster. So just little things like that.
Has there been a moment where you were kind of sitting there or a thing where you had to tell your buddies, like, you know, you won't believe this, you know, you won't believe this happened. So have you had that moment yet, or has there been a moment?
Yeah, there's been a few moments. One that always comes to mind is when we played the Pelicans twice in the preseason, and we played them once in the regular season when I was up. And so we played them the first time down in New Orleans. I'm in the game. I'm in with 1 minute left, and that was the first time I get in, and I hear someone on the bench being like, what the hell is your last name? Like, I look and it's like Boogie Cousins being like, I'm gonna call you, he's like Archie Pistachio, I'm gonna call you Pistachio, Archie Pistachio right now. So then we played him another time, and then he actually gave me an elbow, and then we got an offensive foul, and then like when we played him in the regular season, he gave me a little nudge just like after a play when I got called for a foul, and I just smirked at him. And then at halftime, I'm like, bro, why you got to do that to me? And he's just like, you know, you're my guy after like the preseason, after all that. So I think that's the one thing that always comes to mind.
I mean, it sounds like we got like a buddy cop comedy in the making there with you and Cousins.
I never would have thought of it, but it was pretty funny once I heard. And then I mean, Dante Cunningham, a former Villanova guy, is on the bench being like, Arch, don't listen to him, like, because he's calling me Archie Pistachio. So he's on the bench as well, and it was a good little laugh, and I was for sure texting my family and siblings after that one.
You were obviously a four-year player at Nova, and it's obviously something that's talked about ad nauseum, is the one and done and leaving for the NBA and whether people should go or come back. Have you found any advantages or disadvantages being, you know, in the NBA and G League for playing for 4 years opposed to leaving early, whether it was after your junior year or sophomore year?
I mean, I think someone else asked me this too. I'm like, I didn't really have the choice. I was always staying 4 years. I wasn't one of those one and done or two and done guys. So, no, I think it varies for each person. And I think it's been I enjoyed my college experience in the 4 years that I did, especially being at Villanova. Great coach, great facilities, great players, and great teammates. But I think there's plus and minuses to it for certain guys. I don't know if every guy wants to do the 4 years, whatever school they're at. But I think it's worked out for me. And I think I learned how to play the game at the college level. But there's always going to be an adjustment going from college to the NBA. Last year, I played all my whole season in the D League with the Austin Spurs, and it was just a transitional year. I feel like it's like going from high school to college. It's a completely different game, and you learn just little things. And it was a tough transition for me. But I think that playing in college 4 years did help me a little bit with kind of just getting to know the game a little bit better. But like I said, those 4 years, whether you do one, two, three, or four, you're still gonna have to transition to the NBA, NBA G League game because it's a completely different game than college.
Yeah, you mentioned it's a different game, and I think that's one thing, especially the diehard NBA fans and the diehard college basketball fans don't understand is, you know, college basketball is a lot different than NBA. You know, because you hear, well, that, you know, that great college player should be, you know, how's he not a top 10 pick or how's he not getting all these minutes? And what is the big difference that you've noticed playing at that level? What makes the game so different?
The floor is so spaced out. I mean, I feel like even playing in the G League, I have a great shooter on my team, Jarrell Eddy. And anytime he gets an open look, I think it's going down. And I have the confidence in all my teammates up here, whether it's the NBA or NBA G League, that if they get an open look, they're going to stick it because they're professionals. And there have been games where I'm like, wow, he's really on. And then in college, you watch so many times when you could just dudes are either missing through contact, like layups and just little things of kind of the game is slower at the college level. At the NBA, everyone wants to play so fast paced. There's a defense of 3 seconds. So the lane's always wide open. It's just completely different. But every single night you're going to go up against like the best athlete, the longest, the dude who has the longest arms. You know, in college, you might be able to get a game or two off where guys aren't as big as you, and you know you can kind of take advantage of their one weakness. But most of the times when you're playing in the NBA or even the G League, that these dudes don't really have a weakness that you can kind of exploit. So you're going to have to go to your first, second, third option.
So Villanova is obviously a little bit different than some of the other blue bloods. Villanova is obviously a blue blood with all the success they've had recently. And can you just kind of talk about how Jay Wright has built that program up from your time there, from being recruited to even where it is now, obviously winning the title and winning the Big East, you know, 4 years in a row, and looks like on pace to at least share the title this year. How has Jay kind of turned that program into competing year in and year out by doing it, not by getting, you know, 14 McDonald's All-Americans every year?
I think he's just done a great job of getting guys that kind of fit what he really wants. And he wants the toughest guys on the court. He never talks about winning and losing. He really doesn't care. As long as you're the toughest and hardest playing guy, he thinks that that's going to, or most of the time, that team is going to end up winning. I think he's done a great job, like I said, of just kind of recruiting to not get the best player per se, but kind of get the dude that fits the best. And I think that my class was great with myself and Daniel, where we were just kind of local kids who always watched Villanova and kind of understood what Villanova basketball was all about. And then I think from that point on, I think getting Josh, Chris, and Daryl, who weren't all, like you said, no McDonald's All-Americans, but could be really good college basketball players. And I think we saw the culmination of what Josh Hart came to be his senior year or junior and senior year. And then you go from that class to getting Phil Booth and Mikhail Bridges. I mean, two dudes that have been great, great college basketball players. And I'm sure Mikhail will be a top 20, top 15 pick this year, and that he was a solid high school player, but it took him time to develop while playing under the Javon Pinkstons, the Darren Hilliards, myself, Daniel, and Josh and Chris. I mean, just playing every single day, getting better and kind of enjoying the process of letting the game come to them and letting their development kind of take a step in the right direction every single day. And I think you see it with Jalen. I think Jalen and Dante have been unbelievable. I know Dante was hurt our freshman year, but the things that he did and the impact that he had on our national championship team, I don't think that people talk about it enough, and the fact that he would be the Buddy Hield in practice. He would be the Frank Mason, the Devontae Graham. He would be the other team's best player, and he would really put on a great, great kind of show in practice. And we had to lock into him because he's such a gifted athlete, such a gifted scorer. And I think everyone's seeing it now these past 2 or 3 weeks where he's really taken that next level. And then I don't even remember the class after that, but I think the guys and Coach Wright knows the players he wants. He sees the players who are gym rats. He sees the players who are tough and who have a decent shot that he can help develop, and he can have them buy into the culture. And it's not, I think that he will also bring in these dudes that he can see have pro potential, maybe not in their first year, maybe not in their second year, but can scratch the surface and maybe not be that top eight guy on an NBA team, but they could fill the role of a 9 to 14 on an NBA roster.
Yeah. You kind of mentioned, you listed the guys on that team, and you know, Villanova is obviously a team that's very focused on success at the college level, but that 2016 title team is now all playing or about to be playing professionally, whether it's NBA, G League, International. Was the dream of playing pro basketball talked about with you guys in that locker room, or is it just kind of something that's happened and now you look back and just go, you know, kind of, damn, I guess we did have a bunch of professionals, because everyone kind of talked about your title team as almost like this little engine that could type story, and you list the guys. It's, you know, you've played in the NBA. Mikal Bridges is expected to be a lottery pick. Jalen Brunson is expected to be drafted. Uchefu is in the G League. I believe he's played a couple minutes in the NBA, and you have guys that are playing. Hart's in, you know, first round pick. So was that dream kind of talked about with you guys at the year? Did it click? We're kind of going, oh hey, you know, we can kind of make a living out of this in a couple months here once we win this thing.
You know what? We never talked about it because we all knew that our best chance of becoming pros would be with the success of our team. And with the success of our team, I think comes attention. I think that attention from the scouts and people talking about you on television, I think people take notice. And I think that's what people did for our championship team with Josh. And Daniel played a full season with the Wizards. Maybe he's not, like I said, a 1-9 guy, but he was on an NBA roster. He's played NBA minutes. Myself, I've played NBA minutes. Josh has played NBA minutes. So that's three guys right there who have played in an NBA game before. I'm expecting Jalen. I'm expecting Mikal. And I even think Eric and Phil, even Dante, have a chance to do something like that. So it was never really talked about, but I think that we all knew that with the success of our team, good things would come of it. And I think Coach Wright does a great job of kind of keeping the guys focused on the here and now and focusing on, look, like you'll get all the attention. You'll do this. You'll all be professionals, whether it's in the NBA, G League, or overseas. But the best thing you can do for yourself is be here now and kind of just focus on that.
You know, everyone loves comparing the old Big East to the new Big East. You know, it's almost ridiculous at this point. But you actually played in both conferences. Is there really a difference in the, you know, the memories of the old Big East versus what the new Big East now, which is still a top three conference year in and year out?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really notice much difference because I only got 1 year with the old Big East, but it was a great experience. I mean, playing on the road at Syracuse, playing at Pitt was great. We didn't get to play at Louisville, but we played at Notre Dame, and I remember we beat two top five teams, which was kind of like our kind of coming out party within college basketball. And then we had to go play at Notre Dame, and we were feeling ourselves. Then we go get our butt kicked there. So it was definitely grueling there. But I remember times in the new Big East where we've had a tough 3-4 game stretch where you play Georgetown. You play Georgetown when they had had a solid group. They had Seton Hall, who always beat us, who beat us once every single year I was in college. And then you had Dougie McBuckets at Creighton, and then you had all the Xavier teams, and you had just the Chris Dunns of Providence and St. John's with D'Angelo Harrison would always have, give us great games. So I think it was grueling in both leagues, but I think this new Big East, I think has gotten at least 4 or 5 teams in ever since the realignment. I think we got 7 in last year, and maybe – hopefully six in this year. So I think it's been a very good league up and down. I think you see those road games. I mean, it's tough for any team to play a couple ranked teams, then go right on the road to play a Seton Hall who always plays well at home and who always gives us the best effort. And then you have to go play, let's say, at fly across, like halfway across the country and go play a Creighton team that runs up and down the floor and has one of the best college basketball environments in the country.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you, what is the toughest place to play? Or what for you, what was the toughest place to play in the Big East? Was it having to go to Omaha and Creighton? Is it, you know, the Dunk, or is it something different?
We always would talk about it, myself and my two good buddies who were walk-ons, Henry Lowe, who's a grad assistant at Nova, and Pat Farrell, who's working in New York City, that how much we loved playing at Providence at the Dunkin' Donuts Center. There was something about that place that it was always a ruckus crowd. We lost there my freshman year, had a double overtime game my sophomore year, and then junior and senior were great games going up against Chris Dunn and Ben Bentzel, and I think LaDante Henton was still there. They had it rolling. Those crowds, I don't think they liked Villanova very much, but we always get there for a warm-up an hour and a half early, and their student section's already filled, and they're always giving us crap. That was probably the best one in the Big East that we played at. I would have to put the Cintas Center up there. I think we were talking before we got on about how much our how hectic that environment is and how much they love their basketball out in Cincinnati. It's a great place to play. And then Creighton, when we played Doug there and Ethan Raggy my freshman year, we lost by 35 or whatever it was at home. And then we go out there thinking it's going to be a different game. And then what do? We lose by 30 again. So that's another ruckus crowd. So they're all great environments, but I would have to put Providence at number one.
Was there a crowd that just really just got after you? Or, you know, you heard certain things? Or was there ever a crowd that was just like one that was in your ear from start to finish? Was it Providence?
I would probably say Providence, just because, like, you would think that it's just the students, but, like, even there's, like, middle-aged men and women who are sitting courtside just kind of, like, despising you and just talking all this crap, and it was all in good fun, and I enjoyed playing on the road. I thought it was a great environment wherever we played at, but I think Providence, I'm telling you, their fans are crazy. They love their basketball, and they don't like Villanova. So playing on Villanova in a road Navy Blues was always a great time when we played up there. And three out of four times, we were able to get the win.
So I got to ask, what the hell was it like the moments leading up to the Jenkins shot and then the immediate moments after? When did it click in that, you know, I can't believe that shot went in and we won the title?
I'll take you before. I think the huddle before when Marcus made the shot, it was just like, I don't think any of us had oh man, we're going to lose this game. It was like, all right, like, what can we do to win this game? And as soon as he hit that shot, I know this is going to sound crazy and I'll sound like cocky, but like, I knew the ball was going to be in my hands.
Right.
And like, I was like, man, I'm going to hit the best shot in college basketball history. That's like, just like the first thing that came to my mind. We go into the huddle and we all know what we're going to run. The ball is going to be in my hands for me to make the right decision and not just take the last shot. I think you see a lot of the guys at the end of the games try to take that last shot, whether a guard or not. But I think that I was able to kind of know it like the back of my hand, what play we were running. Daniel set a great screen, and then having Chris Jenkins run up on my right side and just kind of, I heard him just say arch, 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 even in front of 70,000 people. I say, I heard him and, pass it to him, and I had a good line. I thought it was gonna go in, but then as soon as it went in, I think all hell broke loose, especially with the confetti going like 2 seconds after.
That was the greatest confetti toss of all time. Like, whoever was on that button couldn't, like, he got lucky that it was before the clock ended. Otherwise, that would have been terrible.
Yeah, if there was 0.1 second, we had to clean off the floor. But I mean, it was just crazy. But like the confetti guy, whatever happened. So this past year when North Carolina won, they were shaking hands already. And then he hit the confetti because they had talked about it. And they were like, we don't want another situation where this dude is just like, oh, okay, let me hit this button. Like, and not have to like go back and put time on the clock and clear the floor. But after the ball went in, it was just, it was crazy knowing that it's your last game, you know, that you've made it to as far as you possibly could. And you always want to win, but if we would have lost, it would have been terrible. But I think looking back, it would have been great. But thank God we won, and it was just all hell broke loose after that. People were running around, going crazy. I know I ran up a little bit into the stands to see my parents, hug them, and there was a lot of great pictures, great times, and great memories out there.
How weird is that day, just in general, leading up to the game? Because it's a late start. You know, you're kind of sitting around. You know what's at stake. Obviously, is it as hard as much as you try to make it? Okay, it's just another game. Was that day different? Did you feel like it was dragging on? I guess what was it like? You know, leading up into shoot around and everything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the games are like 8:20. We were Central Time in Houston, so it was a late game. So it's just the days just drag on and drag on. So the day before, we did all the media, did all that, and then had our practice, our walkthrough practice. And then we had walked through the day off. We do our breakfast, and then had our walkthrough. But it's weird doing your walkthrough when it's an empty 75,000-seat NFL arena. It takes you. It takes you five minutes to walk from the locker into the court. So it was pretty. You were eager for the game to get going, to start your warm ups, your routine. And then the worst time is really after shoot around and until you have to leave for the bus. Cause that's when you're like, all right, it's your nap time. It's your get your meal in, you get your rest, you talk to whoever, make sure all the tickets and everything is all good, all set up. And then you're there. I don't think I took a nap because I was too excited. I think I was just like, oh, myself and Jalen, I was roommates with Jalen the whole, my whole senior year. So we would just talk and kind of, we would watch our like Netflix on our own iPad. But I think both of us were a little bit too excited and amped up to watch or, to go play in the games or to take a nap. So, from that point on, it was just got a pregame meal in. Like I said, took the bus over, you get the police escort. And then as soon as the game started, it's just like any other game. But the day was a long day, dragging on. And then after the game, the celebration, you do media for another 45 minutes. You're on the court for 45 minutes. We didn't get back to the hotel until probably 1:30, 2 o'clock. And we had the whole ballroom filled up with like 2,000 Villanova people. And you still have yet to see your family. So it's like 2:30, 2:45. And then that's when you see your family and you're still wide awake just because everyone's just pure happiness all around anyone you see. And then I don't think we even fell asleep. We just stayed up through the night and then went from there and then Chris did his Good Morning America. And then we were on from there and had to do our little travel back to Philadelphia.
So when you're in the game, did it take a couple minutes or a couple possessions at least to kind of calm the nerves and make it feel like it was just another game? Or did it feel like another game at all during that? Is it easier when the ball just goes up and you get it in your hands?
I mean, it feels like another game when you're warming up, but then they had the videos and the replay, and you have half the Nova crowd, half the Carolina crowd. So the starters are introduced. You're getting goosebumps. You're like, oh man, like this is what every kid kind of dreams about when they're younger, whether it's the NBA or whether it's the NCAA championship, NCAA tournament, you dream about a moment like that. And, as soon as the ball went up, took us probably one possession. I took a terrible shot, like a left-handed hook shot. So after that, I kind of settled in, and I know everyone else is ready to play on our team, and kind of took us a little bit to settle in. But it was an unreal environment. And I wish I can go back to it and just kind of relive it a little bit, but something I'll never forget.
So obviously, you mentioned a good deal here. You talked about rooming with Brunson and playing with Bridges. Two of these guys that are now the stars of this year's team, and two guys likely to be drafted, and with Brunson now a favorite to win National Player of the Year and Bridges as a lottery pick. Did you see this sort of jump in them, or did you know that they were going to be this good? I mean, obviously Brunson came in as an All-American and a top 25 recruit, but did you expect them to turn into, you know, kind of these type of players?
Yeah, I mean, I think Villanova gets those type of players where you expect them to get better and to develop. But I think Jalen came in, I mean, we all know as a top 25 player, like you said, he was that good already. But once he got to take over kind of like the keys to the car, and you saw him last year just keep developing, and then this year you're seeing it averaging, 19 to 20 points a game and leading them to their record now. You kind of expected that from Jalen just because he was such a high-powered recruit. And then Mikhail was – like we had said before, he was a redshirt kind of a local kid who came in as a very young freshman. So he got the redshirt year in, got to practice against older kids every single day who were kind of kicking his butt every single day. I think we all expected it after we saw the progression that Mikhail took in our NCAA tournament run. He defended from who? Angel Rodriguez to Perry Ellis to Isaiah Hicks and to Buddy Hield. He defended kind of a 1 through 5 throughout the NCAA tournament. Right. So you really thought to yourself, like, this kid could be special on the defensive end. And then last year took a step in the right direction with a shot. And I think we're seeing him kind of put everything together this year with his defending, his rebounding. And then his offense has taken a huge step forward where he's been able to come off ball screens and be aggressive and make the right decision while attacking the rim, putting some dudes on some posters this year, and be able to consistently shoot the ball from three over 40%. So I think both of them have taken great steps forward. We really expected it from Jalen for sure, but I think Mikhail has been not as much of a surprise, but a little bit of a surprise with how well he's developed and the player's become and likely to be a top 15 pick.
All right, you got to tell me, please tell me, you guys roast Jay a little bit for the suit selection and being GQ, GQJ throughout his career.
Yeah, we would never just like straight up like make fun of him, but we'd always have our sly comments, and because Coach Wright would always have to laugh or make us go run or something
right.
He would always, yeah. So we would always make our comments here and there, and I don't know if he would always hear them. We had some smart asses on our team, definitely.
All right, man. I appreciate you taking some time out. I know you got a busy schedule. I'll let you get back to it. Good luck the rest of the year, man. Hope you stay healthy and have a bunch of success out there.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. A great time, and good luck to you the rest of the year watching all these games. I'll be reading.
All right, thanks, man. Have a good one.
Sounds good.
See you.